ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 26. King Paranjana goes to the forest to hunt. Text number 13. Tipto Hishtaha Sudhritascha. Kandarpa Krishta Manashaha. Na Vyachashta Varoham. Grihinam Griha Medinim. Tipto Hrishta Sudhritascha. Kandapa Krishna Mandasa. Navya Chasta Baro Roham. Grihinim Griha Medin. Tripta. Satisfied. Krishna. Joyful. Sudhritaha, being very proud. Cha, also. Kandarpa, by Cupid. Akrishta, attracted. Manasa, his mind. Na, did not. Vyachasta, try. Vara Aroham, higher consciousness. Grihinim, wife. Grihamedinim, one who keeps her husband in material life. Translation. After taking his dinner and having his thirst and hunger satisfied, King Paranjana felt some joy within his heart. Instead of being elevated to a higher consciousness, he became captivated by Cupid and was moved by a desire to find his wife who kept him satisfied in his household life. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This verse is very significant for those desiring to elevate themselves to a higher level of Krishna consciousness. When a person is initiated by a spiritual master, he changes his habits and does not eat undesirable eatables or engage in the eating of meat, the drinking of liquor, illicit sex, or gambling. Sattvika ahara, foodstuffs in the mode of goodness, are described in the Shastras as wheat, rice, vegetables, fruits, milk, sugar, and milk products. Simple food like rice, dal, chapatis, vegetables, milk, and sugar constitute a balanced diet, but sometimes it is found that an initiated person in the name of prasad eats very luxurious foodstuffs. Due to his past sinful life, he becomes attracted by Cupid and eats good food voraciously. It is clearly visible that when a neophyte in Krishna consciousness eats too much, he falls down. Instead of being elevated to pure Krishna consciousness, he becomes attracted by Cupid. The so-called brahmachari becomes agitated by women, and the vanaprastha may again become captivated into having sex with his wife, or he may begin to search out another wife. due to some sentiment, he may give up his own wife and come into the association of devotees and the spiritual master, but due to his past sinful life, he cannot stay. Instead of being elevated to Krishna consciousness, he falls down, being attracted by Cupid, and takes to another wife for sex enjoyment. The fall of the neophyte devotee from the path of Krishna consciousness down to material life is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.17 by Narada Muni, Chakva Svadaman Charanam Bhujam Hare Bhajan Apapvota Patetito Yadi Yachakva Bhavatam Abud Amushikin Kovyata Apto Bhajatam Svadamataha. This indicates that although a neophyte devotee may fall down from the path of Krishna consciousness due to his immaturity, his service to Krishna never goes in vain. However, a person who remains steadfast in his family duty or so-called social or family obligation, but does not take to Krishna consciousness, receives no profit. One who comes to Krishna consciousness must be very cautious and refrain from prohibited activities as defined by Rupa Goswami in his Upadesh Amrita. Achyahara aprasascha prajalpo niyamagraha jana sangas chalolyam cha sadbi bhakti vanasyati. A neophyte devotee should neither eat too much nor collect more money than necessary. Eating too much or collecting too much is called atyahara. For such atyahara, one must endeavor very much. This is called parayasa. Superficially, one may show himself to be very much faithful to the rules and regulations, but at the same time not be fixed in the regulative principles. This is called niyamagraha. By mixing with undesirable persons or janasangha, one becomes tainted with lust and greed and falls down from the path of devotional service. So here, King Karanjana, representing the embodied spirit soul, has returned home, and he is searching after his queen, his wife. Now, his wife, as we have seen here, in this analogy, the wife is sometimes referred to as the material intelligence, but basically the intelligence. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada refers to the queen, the wife, as one's original Krishna conscious intelligence. Yeah. And therefore, you know, in Krishna consciousness, we know that living in family life where the wife is assisting in one's spiritual life, in material and spiritual life, that is very favourable for Krishna consciousness. That life based around regular principles. Krishna says, "I am that." Krishna is present fully in all the activities of those grihasthas. Sometimes if the wife has too much material inclination, then that can affect the husband. But vice versa, that the wife can be very Krishna conscious, and the husband is supposed to, guiding the good intelligence of the wife, if he becomes too materialistic, then he in effect becomes, replaces the queen as one trapping one in materialistic life. So we're not pointing the finger at anyone, and women. So the point is that in the previous verse, it described how Puranjana, when he returned home, he was smeared with sandalwood and garlands and bathed and everything and some of the ornaments. And this was compared to, going to the spiritual master. That's home. It's where, going back to where one is refreshed and, if one has been a little out of sorts on one's travels, one comes back to centres oneself at home. So by approaching the spiritual master with the transcendental knowledge, with the good instructions, we become centred in our, spiritual life like that. But although he's done that, he is then, not fully taken the good advice from the spiritual instruction. Here, this we're getting this part of the analogy is compared to the neophyte devotee. So, as we're instructed in the Upadeshamrita that there are six things which spoil one's devotional service, and one of them is Prabhupada. Spends quite a lot of a good portion of the purport discussing kshatriya and eating. So I'm going to start there. So basically, one of the things that spoils one's devotional service is eating too much. And that includes eating too much kshatriya. So, we sing that prayer, Sarida Rukhijal, we sing the prayer to, when we offer, we offer pranams when we go and take prasad. The first thing we do, we offer pranams. Here is Krishna. Krishna has come in the form of prasadam to help me think of Krishna. We offer pranams like that. And so that is Krishna's purpose. And by helping us think of Krishna, as we're eating prasadam, we should be discussing the pastimes of Vrindavan, Radha Krishna, like that. In fact, here in Melbourne, and Pachivari Temple, I was in the late 70s, early 80s. Whenever devotees took prasadam, there was always someone who would read, from Krishna book or sometimes Chaitanya Charitamrita, so that to make sure that we honoured that prayer, that while eating prasadam, we're thinking of Krishna. There's no loose talk of that, to really keep that focus. One of the things I used to love to do, because I used to try and cram as much reading in as I could. Actually, in the first 9 months as a devotee, I'd read all of Prabhupada's books that he had at that stage, and which was, the Srimad Bhagavatam up to Canto 10, Chapter 14, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Next Instruction, Bhagavad Gita, Upanishad, all those. So I read that in the first 9 months because, I took every opportunity. So if I saw, you can actually read, while they're having prasadam, and then very quickly take prasadam, what you need, and then go out and catch up, then I would do that. So, but we used to do that. We used to try and honour that prayer, because that is the meaning of that prayer, we say. So we sing the song, and then we're actually supposed to eat prasadam while thinking of Krishna and discuss, the different pastimes of Krishna. So Krishna has come for that purpose. Otherwise, the senses are going a little bit... disturbed, and so the prasadam makes you know, the senses satisfied, the mind satisfied, and then we can think of Krishna again. That's the purpose of the senses being satisfied. But now Niyamagraha is sort of following the rules and regulations without really taking the purpose of it. That, okay, you know, I'm following the rules and regulations, I'm only eating prasada. The purpose of it, to think of Krishna, I'm not following. It's also Niyamagraha. And therefore, to take prasadam to the point where it actually hampers one's ability to think of Krishna. Now, that it can do that in different ways. So, of course, the you know, one of the obvious ways of that it disturbs our thinking of Krishna is if we eat so much prasadam that we become drowsy. So, you know, then you're giving class and you're looking around, and out of 50 people, there's only one person awake. So you may think, okay, who's been into the milk sweets, you know, after Mangalati? Or perhaps had too much 9 o'clock prasadam, you know, the night before they went to bed, you know, the maha. So, you know, that was a big... Now, there's a very interesting shift in what we do now in ISKCON as to how we used to do things. Now, without, you know, being, I'm not trying to criticise, but there's a little bit of Hinduism. Right? Now, in Hinduism, which I don't even think it's part of Hinduism. Hinduism has a lot of things which they call Hinduism, but it's not even really part of it. But what happens if someone sits down to eat? The person feeds them and they keep feeding them. And the person says, I've had enough. I've eaten enough for 10 men or 10 women, like that, you know, whichever one is more. And they said, no, you must have more. And you think, but I don't want more. You know? So it's, you know, sometimes, for instance, I'll go to programs in Ballarat, Bendigo. I'm leaving their home maybe at 10 o'clock at night. I've got, you know, 2-3 hours to get home. Right? And they're trying to force me, you must have more. And I'm saying, I've got a 3-hour drive at night, there's kangaroos running around wild, and I've got to get home. No, just a little bit more. I think you're trying to kill me? Is that my Dutch name? Kill the priest. And, you know, actually, it's come up in some of our Bhakti Shastri courses, you know, Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Bhava, a few times I've tried to explain. You know, even initiated devotees, even the Brahmanas, but it's ingrained in them. And, you know, I say to them, you know, the idea of it is that you're supposed to fully satisfy that person. What you want to let them know is, if you want more, you can have it. And if you've had enough and that's your full satisfaction, then you can have that. And if you just want a little and that's your full satisfaction, then you can have that. Because my duty is to make you satisfied. But in their minds, they're not satisfied if you don't eat more. See? We don't care about your satisfaction. Whether you've got to drive, whether you've got to get up for Mangalati, whether you've got to give class, we don't care. I'll be satisfied. You take just a bit more. So, but actually, previously, devotees didn't do that. We didn't do that. In fact, I remember, especially for the Sankirtan devotees, the Sankirtan leader would be, you know, at Prasada, and he would carefully watch the maha tray. So, you know, everyone got their kitchen, what have you. But when it came to, you know, how much halva, the Sankirtan devotee and all the milk sweets and that, which really sort of, You know, it's like a knockout pill. You know, the Sankirtan leader was sort of, you know, they would actually, you know, come, you sure you want that? You know? Oh, okay, I might leave that, you know. Well, you've had one, you've had two now. And if you want more? So, of course, some devotees, there was no stopping them. There was this one devotee, Hridananda, which means blissful heart. He was from Scandinavia. He was about, you know, 6 foot, 6.5 foot or something. Huge, you know, big blonde headed Scandinavian. And he used to live in the woods in the forest over there somewhere. So, you know, you can imagine how much he ate. So, you know, his habit, you couldn't stop him. So we just, whatever he wanted, he let him eat. There was no stopping him. And his habit was that at the end of prasadam, he would just eat until literally everything else was gone. So whatever was left in the pots and that, he would just, you know, keep eating until, and you just couldn't, he just had this massive appetite for that, but you couldn't, so there was, like that. So if that was his full satisfaction, okay. But it was very interesting when he, you know, when it came time to go out in Sankirtan, because we'd take him out and he was so full of prasadam that, you know, because in those days we used to wear wigs. In the early days, you'll know these stories, because you couldn't go out with a bald head. Yeah, you know that?
Yeah.
Because in those days, actually, even in Prabhupada's books, he says, it's in his books or his lectures that, you know, generally only a crazy person, you know, if they're not on the spiritual path, generally only a crazy person has a bald head. In those days, if someone had a bald head purposely, they were considered like there's something wrong with that person. Seriously. You know, that person is kooky. You know, like Uncle Fester in the Addams Family or something like that. So you know, people now, if you, that, you know, a 40-year-old man, 50-year-old man, still you think. When you see 20-year-olds with a bald head, it just, it freaked people out. They, you know, it's like they literally go into a sort of semi-shock to see someone like that. So that was one thing. Apart from that, if they understood you're a bald-headed Hare Krishna, you're a Hare Krishna. It's just too much for them. If you're going to sell them something, they're not buying anything, you know. So actually, we used to have to wear wigs because they just, you know, wouldn't give you any money. They just thought you were crazy. So Prabhupada had to put out, you know, like in some of his lectures, I think they even put out a pamphlet, who's crazy, us or them, because that was the thing. These Hare Krishnas are crazy. So, to make sure that people thought we weren't crazy, we wore wigs. It worked if you had a good quality wig.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of passed. But the ones, you know, of course, especially, usually the biggest pickers got the best pick. Those who collected the least got the last wig in the line. Sort of had a part about an inch and a half wide and, you know, just quite strange. But anyway, Hridananda, after breakfast, he would put his wig on. And of course, he was so intoxicated by prasadam that it was sort of uncrooked. And then we'd get out on Sankirtan. He'd be sitting in the passenger seat. And then we'd say, okay, we're going to go and, you know, liberate Lakshmi in this street. And he'd just be dozing off in the passenger seat, dribbling down his chin, on his shoulder, wig half on, all the people walking past, you know, looking into the car, what is wrong with that boy? Anyway, after some time, you let him sleep as long as he could, but then you'd wake him up. But he was still so dazed with his prasadam, and of course he still had the prasadam, you know, like some still on his mouth, and some just, he'd go into the shop. Now, the strangest thing was, people loved him, you know? because he was so, he just had this big dopey grin on his face. He was blissed out. He was actually blissed out being a devotee. And he was blissed out eating prasad. So somehow it worked for him. So he'd walk in and he didn't speak a lot of English, but enough. And people would just buy whatever he had, you know. So, but I wouldn't recommend it for everyone. But so, you know, because you don't want to restrict, as Prabhupada says here, you know, that there's no loss for people, you know, because you can only go so far in your Krishna consciousness like that, which he did. You know, but at some stage, you know, one has to consider how the prasadam is helping one to perform one's service and to, you know, think of Krishna and to remain fixed up in Krishna consciousness. So, and therefore, you know, in the long term, there's no loss for him because we can barely imagine how much prasadam he ate and therefore how much advancement he made. Because, you know, that is described in the, you know, in the Gita that, you know, by eating prasadam, of course, it purifies one's consciousness, it purifies one's sinful reactions, and it allows one to, you know, make progress on the spiritual path. So, we just talked about Sridhananda. You remember him, the big Scandinavian? Yeah.
Pridhananda.
Big, tall, yeah. He's prasadam habits.
Dr. Halva.
Yeah, the Halva. So,
what was his name? His name was
Halva. Halva, that's what we used to call him. Before he got initiated.
Yeah.
Right, that's
H-A-L-V-O-R.
Right. There you go. So he's born with that name. He's born to eat halva. So you know, so there's no loss. Krishna says that. Whereas a person who performs their duties perfectly, and you know, doesn't take to Krishna consciousness at all, there's no gain. There's no profit at all. So we don't, you know, discourage in one sense that, you know, whatever someone can do, you know. But those who want to make, as it says here, if one wants to elevate themselves higher in Krishna consciousness, there are other principles besides making advancement by how much you can, you know, eat prasadam and become blissful in that way. Because, you know, that it can also agitate the senses. We were talking first about being a bit dozy. You know, there was some devotees, you know, because of their prasadam habits, they struggled a lot with staying awake, and sometimes they would actually, you know, like to not go out on Sankirtan just so that they could stay back and just sleep as much as they can. There was one devotee I remember in Adelaide. He was my Sankirtan partner. We used to go out every day, but he really loved his sleep, and he'd get as much as he could whenever he could. And probably, you know, eating a little too much prasadam and what have you. Yeah, one day I was ready to go out in Sankirtan, and, you know, I was looking for him, okay. I knew he was there, I'd seen him. And I saw him at prasadam. I looked everywhere in the temple, looked around the temple, this is in Adelaide. Couldn't find him anywhere. And I thought, he's finding a place where he can sleep, you know, because he just wants to have a sleep. And I thought, there's only one place in this entire temple that I haven't looked. And that's down in the basement, when I went down there. You've got the laundry, and a very dark place, sort of down. It is in Frame Street, and there's a big pile of clothes in the corner, and I thought, I didn't look under there.
I didn't look under there.
I went down and I looked under there, and there he was sleeping. So at least he wasn't doing it while he was driving. That's even worse. So you know, because you know, devotees, again, devotees will take all sorts of risks for Krishna's sake, but they don't take risks that are not for Krishna's benefit, that are not conducive to their service. You know, devotional service in one sense is a great adventure. You know, devotees go out and go to all different places in their local place or around the world. And, you know, it's a great adventure, the people you meet and, you know, the situation sometimes that you get yourself in. So, you know, and it's risky, because sometimes devotees are out preaching and doing so many things. It's risky, you know, because sometimes we have to, you know, in the association of materialists, it can, you know, agitate the mind and the senses. It's risky because we're in Kali Yuga, there's a lot of crazy people running around. So for preaching, for the service of Krishna, we take this. But just for the sake of adventure, or what have you, we don't take any risk. And, you know, so, you know, sometimes this, in this verse you see here, sometimes the lines get blurred. You know, we take prasadam to help us think of Krishna, but we don't take prasadam, you know, just for personal sense gratification. That hampers our service. So, you know, I remember being somewhere out the back of New South Wales. Three of us, we were all brahmacharis. And you know, we always, at the brahmacharis and the travelling, you know, brahmacharis means the men and the grihasthas, really, because they're travelling and following the regular principles. But, you know, there's a bit of camaraderie, and sometimes, you know, get a little overexcited with the adventurous nature of Sankirtan. I remember one time where I was driving, and this, we were coming up to, it was getting late at night, it was just on dusk. And we were coming up to a river, and the bank went from basically about where we were, and it just went for about, you know, 50 metres on a dead straight flat, and then just merged with the river, which was on the same level. So it gradually just a very slow incline, and it was basically just a mud bank. And I said to the devotee, "Don't go any further." And he's, "Oh, no, I wouldn't go further, you know, just sort of, you know, that sort of, you know, let's have an adventure sort of thing." "And no, 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 turn, come back this way." "Oh, no, no, I wouldn't go, just a little bit." Anyway, he just went like a little bit further, even a metre or two. And what happened, of course, is the car just started sliding. There's no control at that point, and it just slid. And it slid, and it slid, and it slid, and into the river. we all went straight into the river. And then it got dark. We're out in the middle of nowhere. Because we used to find rivers and what have you, because, you know, that was, again, part of the great adventure of, you know, preaching, is that you'd bathe by a river, bathe in the ocean, so, you know, seeing so many beautiful places, and, you know, living off the land, and, you know, like that, because... In those early days, we never got motels, you know, tents, you know, anything, you know, that come a little bit later. So you quite often just camp by the car. So we'd always look for a river. Anyway, then we had to, I stayed there, watched the car slowly sink, tried to grab some of the things out, and those two boys went off, and then hours later they come back with a farm with a tractor and pulled their car out. But, you know, but there's a blurry line between doing things that are, you know, making things exciting. Let's do something that's our life as a devotee is exciting. So when it favors your Krishna consciousness, it's good. Or, you know, then if it's just something unfavorable for Krishna, we don't take a risk. We don't take a risk with prasadam. We don't take a risk with, you know, our senses. Because if the senses do become agitated, then of course, as it describes here, one will be captivated by Cupid. When you take a risk with the senses, the mind and the senses again become captivated. Now Prabhupada says here, he says it is clearly visible. Means that he has seen this firsthand, both in ISKCON and out of ISKCON, that when a neophyte in Krishna consciousness eats too much, he falls down. Instead of being elevated in pure Krishna consciousness, he becomes attracted by Cupid. So, we encourage devotees to eat prasadam, you know, to their full satisfaction and not be artificial. So for instance, you know, we've got to be very careful, being a little bit miserly in devotees satisfying themselves with prasadam also. So there's a warning not to eat too much, but there's also a warning not to, you know, be too unnecessarily austere. When Hridayananda Maharaj, the sannyasi, when he took sannyas, just after that, maybe in the same day or days later, he was in one temple and I think Prabhupada had come out of class or something, and Prabhupada was going upstairs. And as he passed, you know, when they come to the balcony, at the end of the balcony, you know, you have that little round thing. I think it's where you put your prasadam, you know, you rest your prasadam. Although I don't know if it's specifically made for that, but most temples, you know, if there's a little thing coming down at the end of the stairway, you'll find a plate of prasadam sitting on that little round thing at the end of the, what do they call that? The balustrade sort of thing. Anyway, there was this, Hridayananda describes it, this plate of prasadam, and it was stacked up. There was like some beast or something. And as Prabhupada went up the stairs, he looked at it. Hridayananda Maharaj looked at it. He's thinking, you know, fixed in my vows, you know, perfect control of my senses, very careful like that. Prabhupada looked at the plate, Hridayananda looked at the plate. They looked at each other, Prabhupada turned to him and said, "Eat it." And then, you know, because Prabhupada always knew, you know, the what was going on, you know, here's this, he's just taken sannyas. I don't want you to be artificial with prasadam, you know. He made that point. Eat it. Don't be artificial. So, at the same time, because sometimes what happens, of course, if we're a little, say, too harsh, and as I was talking before about Sankirtan leaders, sometimes they would monitor what you would eat, which was very helpful. But you can't be too harsh, because then devotees go the other way, and then what they do is they start making their own Simply Wonderfuls and stashing them somewhere. You know. So you can get a knee-jerk reaction the other way. You know, I can tell you another story about that. One time when I was in West Australia, again, three of us, it's actually the same one who drove the car to the river was with me. But we're out, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles up north. And we'd been doing Sankirtan for weeks. And then Radhastami was coming up in about 3 days. And we called the temple. So we'd like to come back for Radhastami. And he said, "No." "No, you can't come back." You say, and we, you know, at this stage we were, you know, very austere. You know, you can imagine what we used to eat, because there's very little you can buy in the shops in those days, you know, very early 80s, you know, to actually have a vegetarian meal. Sometimes we'd actually just eat rice. And sometimes it's just, you know, some olives and something. You know, sometimes it's very, you know, very little. Sometimes we buy a packet of potato chips and a block of butter, you know, and that was all we could get, and we'd just eat that. So we wanted to come back to the temple and, you know, go to the feast, have some nice prasadam, dance, and everything.
No.
Yeah. So it was just too much for us. You know, we actually couldn't follow that instruction. So what we did is we spent 3 days preparing for our own Rahanastami. So there's only three of us. So in that time, we shopped and we cooked. We cooked for a couple of days, the three people. We cooked hundreds and hundreds of gulabjamuns and a variety of different sweets and this huge, you know, curd, sabji, and, you know, everything. Massive big fish. The three people. It was an so then on Radhastami, we had our Radhastami. And we had this massive big feast, and then we had this gulabjam competition. Yeah. And that's when I ate over 100 gulabjams. Yeah, I'm certain. I counted 130. Because what would happen is you actually had to... Yeah. You actually had to throw the gulabjam, catch it in the mouth. Now, my problem was I couldn't catch them. So you had to eat that one. No matter where it landed, you had to pick it up, eat every little scary of it, and you had to keep eating until you caught one. And I couldn't catch them. But for the pleasure of Radharani, I was going to win that competition. Anyway, that's what I was saying to myself. So you know, at the end of that, you know, we just rolled around on the ground and just laughed and laughed for hours and hours and hours. Anyway, the point of that is, you know, be careful saying no, you can't have it. You know, prasadam, because it doesn't always work. Anyway, the idea is that whatever we do in Krishna consciousness, the goal of all the rules and regulations is to help us be very thoughtful of Krishna and how we're serving him in a, you know, with full control of the mind and senses, full focus, and just really refined intelligence to do our service in the best possible way, like that. Which is the best for the movement, best for ourselves, best for the community, like that. So all the rules and regulations bring us to that point. If we're following, you know, some rules and regulations and they're actually opposed to that principle, then we have to look at that. And that's what Prabhupada is saying here, that those who are desiring to elevate themselves to a higher level of Krishna consciousness, this verse is for them. And you know, he's mentioning these simple things. So one of the things about Krishna consciousness, as we see with Srila Prabhupada, is that, you know, what stands out with Srila Prabhupada is his daily, you know, moderate activities. That every day, you know, he would perform his regular activities, you know, such as looking after his health. He'd go for, you know, the morning walk, you know, he'd do his japa, he'd give his class, he'd eat prasadam. You know, and you know, he'd take some rest, what he required to his satisfaction. You know, he'd translate his book. In this, you know, these things here, they actually say, you know, it's very fascinating. In these days, if you say to people, you know, they say, oh, I've got so many difficulties, and you say, you look at it and you think, oh, have you tried sort of sleeping regularly and eating regularly? Or, you know, you're a guru. Big guru, you know that. It's, no, because, you know, to them it's like, oh, you know, what scriptures, what mystical scriptures are you reading? Where are you getting this confidential knowledge that we've never heard? But actually, you know, this is... it is the basis of yoga. Whether one follows karma yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga, or Bhakti Yoga, it is the same principles that one, all yogas are meant to regulate the senses so that one doesn't ever act for sense gratification. All yoga. And without regulating sense gratification, one cannot be a yogi. One will make some advancement, you know, but one cannot go to the higher place. So it is, you know, the bedrock. So Prabhupada's example was like that. That, you know, for each, of course, according to their advancement, you know, their daily routine is very, very significant in keeping the mind and senses, you know, from the prasadam that we eat, you know, the morning program, the evening program, everything like that, looking after health. So anyway, these are some of the points here. There's many, many points here. So I'll just leave it here if anyone has any questions or comments. Well, I definitely think I lost a few brain cells. Look, you know, on that day, we truly wanted to, you know, glorify, you know, Radharani. And so we cooked this big feast, you know, for the pleasure of Radharani. Because it's only 3 years, because we had to eat it, and we wouldn't want to put prasadam together. But somehow or another, you know, we were collecting, you know, out in the middle of the desert, day in, day out. Very harsh conditions, eating conditions, sleeping conditions. We were sleeping by the car. We're doing all that for Radharani, and you know, our little festival for Radharani was like that. Actually, you know, in our mind, the thing was that everything we'd going through so much, you know, for Radharani. What, you know, so much difficulty for Radharani. Then how are we being told that it's sense gratification to come back and celebrate her ceremony? You know, how is that sense gratification for us? As if we're doing so much for Srimati Radharani, but if we come back and join in on the festival, somehow that's sense gratification. So, you know, we couldn't understand that. That, you know, our festival was just an extension of everything we were doing. We were going to Summer City and the feasting and everything like that was part of it. But so, you know, that was the best Radhastami I've ever had because of the consciousness of those three Sankirtan devotees. You know, we're all a little bit foolish in those days, but still, it was the best Radhastami I've ever had. Because we really, you know, that day we read about, you know, Radharani, we chanted about Radharani, we gave a class about all that whole day we discussed Radharani and prayed to Radharani and so many different things like that. So it was very Radharani conscious. And, you know, I always felt from that time that I found a little place that, you know, we were saying, Radharani, you know, you are the biggest part of our heart and we want to celebrate. I always find that I found a little tiny little spot at the lotus feet of Radharani that day. And one day when I was in New Nandigram Farm, so there was a festival there. We used to have the kitchen on the hill where Managriva lives. So we used to cook there and then transport it over. So one day I was cooking gulab jams. And I was cooking about 200 per batch, big wok. Now, as you know, who's cooked gulab jams here? When you cook gulab jams, you have to keep turning them. Yeah? So yeah, you get a wooden spoon, very carefully, they've got to keep spinning. If they don't spin, they'll burn one side, they don't, you know, they, one side's a bit tough, the other side's a bit, you know, like that. You've got to keep them spinning like that. And gradually turning up the heat. So anyway, about a third of the way through cooking those 200 gulab jamuns, you know, I was up there by myself, someone said there's a bit of, you know, my daughters, who are actually doing all sorts of things to help organise the festival, they'd locked themselves out of the house. So I had to go up and get into the house somehow, and then I also had to pop into the temple, make sure all the arrangements were there, and a few other things. So I actually left those... Because when I used to cook gulab jamuns, what I do is I chant one round and then you turn the heat up. One round, turn the heat up. One round, turn the heat up. Like that. Anyway, so I thought, I'm going to have to leave these gulab. So I went back, got into the house, had to break into a window, let my kids in, went up to the temple, and they said, Ganga, aren't you cooking gulab jamuns? I said, yes, yes, yes. Now, when I went back to the kitchen up there, those gulab jamuns had rolled themselves continuously for that whole time I was away. When I'm looking at them, there's 200 gulab jamuns and they're all rolling themselves. And that whole time, they're perfectly on every side, and I took them out and they're perfectly done. And when I saw that, I thought, yeah, somewhere, because actually when we cook, who's cooking? Actually, we're doing it under the spiritual energy. We cannot, you know, as Krishna says, whatever we do as instruments in the hands of Krishna. And, you know, these activities such as cooking for Krishna, actually to do that, you cannot do that unless you're under, you know, you take shelter at any stage of our devotional service of the spiritual energy. It's not a material activity. And sometimes the spiritual energy gives you a little bit of mercy and shows you, yes, you're not cooking them, the spiritual energy, because the spiritual energy, you're not selling these books. That is the spiritual energy from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. You're not, Arjun, you're not winning this battle. That is Krishna's energy, you know, like that. But sometimes we get that little mix. So anyway, I feel that I might have made a little bit of advancement by eating all those gulab jamuns. I've got a little bit of a blessing there. Yeah. So, I sacrificed a few brain cells. But I got some spiritual benefit. Yeah. Any other? Yeah.
You had said about overeating will make the neophyte devotee fall down.
Yes.
And then it speaks about the Guru or even Vanavastha will deviate from the path of ashram. Can you shed some light on that,
please? Well, you know, Prabhupada is giving examples that all of these persons he describes how they fall down, whether they're brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha. He's grouped in neophyte devotees that have, you know, not kept control of their senses, even though they're apparently following the instructions of the spiritual master. But if a devotee comes to the point where they really come under the influence of lust, then Prabhupada's point here is that, you know, it would appear that one is not properly following the instructions of the spiritual master. That's the point. If someone comes to that point that they're with a brahmachari, sannyas, you know, at some stage there's a little negligence in some aspect of what they should be following to the spiritual master, and it can be a very basic principle. And this is why we say everything happens under the spiritual energy of the Lord. You know, if a devotee follows even the, you know, just the basic principles, a very simple thing. You know, they don't have to, you know, do some major thing in ISKCON. But if they do the simple thing the spiritual master asks them, they will get the full blessing of the spiritual energy of the Lord and be able to perform nice services by the inconceivable mercy of the Lord. You know, that a lame man can cross mountains, a blind man will see the stars, and a fool will speak, you know, eloquently, even on the topics of Krishna consciousness. So, and therefore we see with Bharat, that was, the story of Bharat, who then, his consciousness, instead of all his rules and regulations keeping him fixed, there was something he neglected, and then his consciousness went to the deer, which made him take another birth. And this is the whole point of this verse, that if we don't want to take another birth, there's a high level of Krishna consciousness where we're thinking of Krishna practicing, so at the time of death we're going to think of Krishna. Prabhupada mentions that he neglected to consult his spiritual master at the time of this perplexity. So, you know, it's a very simple, you know, he probably should have heard from his spiritual master about something that, you know, was obviously a perplexing situation. You know, in the previous verse and in these verses, the essence of advancement in Krishna consciousness is to be able to associate with devotees and hear from them and take guidance like that. And so even with prasadam, you know, prasadam, one actually has to associate with devotees and take guidance from devotees to actually take prasadam, honor prasadam, prasada sevaya, it's a service, properly. If a devotee has the attitude, well, you know, I like this, I like that, you know, and they don't listen nicely, it will lead to fall down. So, you know, it's every aspect of devotional service that we do on a daily basis, we associate with devotees and you know, discuss, as mentioned in yesterday's verse. Always discussing these the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita. So, discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, we might say, if we're sitting with devotees and we may want to just discuss Radharani, you know, every day of the year and her pastimes with Krishna, but that, you know, actually, a senior devotee would think, well, I'm watching your eating habits and your sleeping habits, and I think, let's not discuss that part of the Bhagavatam. Let's discuss this verse, you know, Canto 4, chapter 26, verse 14, what Prabhupada said. Let's discuss that. Now, if a devotee doesn't want to hear that, you know, then, you know, there's a problem there. So it's a very simple, you know, one of the main things we do is hear, especially younger devotees, but throughout the whole of their devotional service is hearing. As soon as we neglect that, these little things can, you know. So the problem is, can be very small, but as I said, Maya is in like a needle and out like a plough. There's a little gap. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says in the purport there that when we take the Krishna consciousness, we declare war on Maya. She's coming for us. You know, and if there's a little gap, you can guarantee Maya will, you know, notice that before we do, and she'll be all over. And she's in like a needle, a little bit of Maya, and out like a plough. Devotion service. So, it's not rocket science in one sense. You know, they're very simple things. But as we're saying, if you speak these topics to the general mass of people, they're revolutionary thoughts. But even if they hear them, they have no ability to follow them unless they get the strength of association with the devotee, and they regularly, as they make advancement to a certain point, they've got devotees then taking them to the next higher level. Like that. Otherwise, the revolutionary. Yeah. Any other questions? Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada. Ki Jai. Krishna Vishal. Ki Jai.